Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we are joined also, of course, by Phil Conlon. Phil has a program, Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Phil, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Phil, and I'm anxious to hear what you have to say on some very interesting subjects today.
Well, I'm very interested in what you have to say. last week we had Stephen Gowans on, by the way, and Zafar Benghash. We're very glad we were able to speak to them. They raised a lot of terrific points for us. I want to start off with Saturday's Toronto Star. I'll just say, we'll be talking about a number of things. We're going to be talking about a situation with Rwanda and Paul Rusesabagina. Along the way, we're definitely going to talk about the new Biden administration and the excitement around both his inauguration and the riots that took place, attempting to block the counting of votes at the Electoral College. But the Saturday Toronto Star did something very irresponsible, in my opinion, but it's a sign of the times. They had a front page story. Are you buying products that were made with forced labor? And it's a kind of name and shame game, all based on a smear, a false allegation. Let's put it this way, an unproven allegation, which comes from Washington, D.C., and secondarily, perhaps, the number two most favored member of the Five Eyes group, Australia, which is strongly hostile to China. It has a long, long history of a colonial state that was very race conscious and remains so. But because the bandwagon is forming to try to isolate China, and that'll be a question we're going to have to touch as we go along. Is Biden going to keep this bandwagon rolling? And every indication, in my opinion, is yes, he is. He's going to do it. Very likely. But the Toronto Star decided to get aboard, and they have two authors, one from the Guelph Mercury Tribune and the other Toronto Star. And they treat it like they're doing a big investigation, investigation that says, well, no, the whole story is based on the idea that there are companies, Canadian companies, that receive goods and sell goods through contracts with Chinese producers who some of these goods come from a region of China where the U.S. State Department has determined that a forced labor is practiced. There is no proof of that. That is an American invention. And we're following a pattern where they have imposed the United States. And this, remember, Donald Trump and Pompeo, allegedly people in Canada don't have a high opinion of Mr. Pompeo. They don't have a high opinion of Donald Trump. They've established unilateral sanctions. These are not international sanctions. These are American sanctions, and in league with the concept of American dominance, and a trade war, an actual trade war, with China. So to implement their trade war, they begin to try to criminalize the economic activity of a sovereign country. And they don't do that by means of any international body. This is unilateralism. It is highly destructive of everybody's trade because it has a punitive element. And if you read the Toronto Star article, all you find out is that some American congressman certainly people in the State Department, and as I say, the Australians, have claimed things, but there's no evidence. And the there is no respect for international law. This is lawless. This is one power trying to undermine, destroy trade. Canada's trade, by the way, Canada's trade with one another. And really this points out to me, and I hope to our listeners, it's time to take a little stock and say, well, okay, we know, we can talk about what the US wants. Is that what we want? Because it's assumed, this article assumes that if America says something, accuses a country that it doesn't like of doing something harmful to American trade, Canada should just, what, be a parrot and say, yes, and go down the same road. Frankly, that is what is going on. And on the tail, we've talked about it, that Meng Wanzhou, a Chinese businesswoman who committed no crime, and her company has never been accused of any wrongdoing by Canada. Remember, Canada's a country, look it up, has a flag, belongs to the international community, is actually a member of the United Nations. I mean, there was a time, of course, when Canada was considered, you know, the little cousin of Britain, but we're a real country. So Donald Trump decided to have Meng Wanzhou arrested in order to help an American business. The problem, as we've said on the Taylor Report, is that Canada agreed to act on his wishes. And this article in the Star indicates a what I'd call a pattern of conduct, which predicated on the idea that if the United States Congress, people like Rubio and McConnell and Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, if they decide something, that's gospel. Where would that? I'm for it. I'm, you know, our hand goes up. And this article actually is highly destructive of the best interests of the Canadian people and Canadian business and of free trade. But the most dangerous part of it is that they say there are sanctions and there are findings by the Americans. And think of the ripple and how you look at the world. The United States has put Cuba on the list of terrorist countries. It now says that Cuba's a terrorist. They put sanctions, crippling sanctions on Venezuela. And Canada goes along, they recognize this phony character, his name, Guaido. His representative, by the way, Guaido's group, was at the inauguration for Joe Biden. This does not bode well for people to say, oh, let's take a good deep breath, you know, and now freedom has returned and everything is going to be hunky-dory under Joe Biden. But in fact, this is poison. And the Toronto Star is repeating it making it a sort of a broad popular issue. They interview Canadian politicians, oh, we have to be on guard for thee and all that. What we need is actually to join international groupings. Canada needs to join international groupings and say, what do you think? And you know what will happen? The countries of the world, particularly the closest neighbors of China, will say, this is frankly just an American propaganda game. And it's propaganda aimed at forming what Joe Biden calls an alliance of democracies against China. Canada should not have a policy of being against. The word we use is most commonly is the healthy word is multilateralism. And a little bit of that language is creeping into the new formulations coming from Washington. However, they understand multilateralism as putting together a gang, and they call it the gang of democracy, when actually it's the as we've said on the Taylor Report, it is a Five Eyes-led gang, and Five Eyes is New Zealand, Australia, United States, UK, and Canada, and they are the Anglo-American alliance that has sought to dominate the world. They're not shy about it, by the way. I'm not inventing this project. It goes all the way back to Churchill and his famous remark in Missouri when he was giving his speech about what we had to do with the Soviet Union. He said, we need a world led by an Anglo-American alliance. So it's been in place as a concept, and it's being reinforced now. But the world has changed. The colonial world that Churchill said he would never give up and had to give up, but he said he wouldn't, is still struggling to be born. And it is a multilateral world, or should be, in which countries are recognized in their sovereignty. They receive respect from other parties, and they can do business and trade with each other with non-interference in each other's affairs. That's a very basic principle. Now, where do you find that idea written down and protected? That you will find at the United Nations. So when you read these articles, like the one in the Toronto Star, there's no United Nations stuff there. It's all US. And then number two, it's Australia. The organization that is quoted as being, you know, the Institute for Studies in Chinese Matters is funded by the US State Department and Pentagon. Literally, honestly, look it up. This is a grouping that is actually functioning over and against the United Nations. And one of the things that's slowly emerging, and it seems to me, and particularly now and that we're in the 21st century, is that the old world of imperialism and colonialism is struggling to keep its grip on power. And when the Star writes this article, they really reveal the dirtiness of the project, because they only quote Americans and Australians and some refugee organizations here that want to use NATO, British, American power over and against China. That's their right, they can do that, but they do not represent China. They represent movements that are associated with attempts to overthrow the Chinese government. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And before I leave that topic, I want to just point out how terrible the thinking is. The Toronto Star made one attempt to have somebody tell them that the Chinese are using forced labor, and her name is Amy Lehr, director of the Washington-based Human Rights Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. What a marvelous bunch of people that would be. It told a Canadian parliamentary committee last July that forced labor is part of the Chinese government's oppression of Uyghurs and its re-education and poverty alleviation. Ooh, poverty alleviation, there's a crime against humanity in the region. And here's her quote. It's Weasley. Our research and interviews indicate that at least some of those transferred to work are not doing so willingly. Oh, at least some. That's overwhelming evidence. And then she says, and are often significantly underpaid. Well, she might be talking about farm workers in California, or, pardon me, Jamaicans brought to Canada. Did they all really want to come? At any rate, it just, that is supposed to be the basis of telling Canadian companies they can't buy and telling Canadian buyers they can't receive these goods, when there is no finding by any legitimate and credible institution other than a little gang of groups that are all on the State Department payroll. We're the ones who are bankrupt and politically in deep, deep danger, because this kind of stuff, which is, this is just a smear, is accepted, and politicians see a chance to get elected on it. So let's stop illegal sanctions. We could start with sanctions against the Islamic Republic, sanctions against Venezuela, sanctions against Cuba. Canada should have no part of any of that. And tell the Americans, go fly a kite, join the multicultural world, get with the United Nations. And by the way, increase your prospects of surviving, because the policies followed by Washington are bad for Washington. And since we seem to be influenced by them, it might be bad for Canada. Again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. Phil, did you see the Biden inauguration? Did you see the...
Oh, yes.
We had the preliminaries, which was storming the Capitol. Then we had the...
That was first act.
Which was the inauguration.
Right. And I could not find in Mr. Biden's speech a single mention of policy, but he did finish the speech by invoking God's assistance to look after our troops. So of course, then I wonder, why are you going to be doing something with the troops that need God's assistance? That's what it certainly sounded like to me. What can I say? It was very nice. There was a poet there, a young woman from Los Angeles. That was frankly the classiest part of the whole show. I thought I enjoyed her a lot more than any of the politicians.
You thought she was more impressive than Lady Gaga? Gaga?
Well, Lady Gaga, yeah.
Lady Gaza, I'm old, Mike.
Lady Gaza is past her best before date, I think. I don't pay much attention to her, you know.
Well,
you know what? If they had gotten a 22-year-old opera singer just out of the Los Angeles Music Academy there, or the Juilliard School, I would have liked that more than Lady Gaga. You know.
We should. I want to thank the Black Agenda Report, particularly Glenn Ford, their editor, for commenting on the events. The preliminary, the cage fighting that they staged at the Capitol. I thought that was creative. For using the appropriate language, because there's inflation going on because of the way the Democrats and Republicans quarrel with each other. Everything has to be inflated. All, you know, the language and the personalities. Glenn Ford called them hooligans and rioters, but President-elect and now President Joe Biden, he called it an insurrection. He called it a sedition. And of course, the United States Congress is now talking about, they're going to see if they can make a case against Trump about it, which, you know, this is a part of the politics of the sideshow, where that what happened there does need to be looked at. I appreciated the remarks of Tulsi Gabbard, who said, It's outrageous behavior, and anybody who organized it should be punished. Anybody who participated in the violence should be punished. But some elements of it were, to my mind, inflated, their significance was inflated in order to keep everybody on a kind of a edge of hysteria. I was curious because there's a phrase people use. They say there was this storming the Capitol at where five people died. And so I thought, well, tell me about that. Who were they? And what was the circumstances of their death? One striking thing was that all five, of course, well, striking, they were all Trump supporters, including, it turns out, the policeman who was killed. He was, it's a little bit of irony or whatever for the stormers, is the guy that the policeman they killed had a Facebook page with a picture of Trump, or not of his plane, Trump's plane. And he was a veteran, and he had served, and he was an angry veteran, by the way. He was unhappy with the way they treated I think he was in the Air National Guard or Reserve, and he's been writing letters to the paper. Actually, it's not clear how he died. They think he was hit with a fire extinguisher that someone threw. It was probably a police, off-duty policeman with the Trump crowd who threw it at the defenders of the Capitol and hit a Trump supporter on the other side. The other person who was directly killed, actually lost her life, was a Trump supporter, a veteran. And her name, I'll look it up in a moment, but at any rate, she was shot. That's going to be an interesting investigation because even I've noticed some socialist and progressive websites have been talking about how guns were used and all that. One gunshot fired, and it was by a Capitol policeman, and I'm not criticizing, I don't know what he thought was happening, and he pulled the trigger and he killed this demonstrator who was clearly violating the law. So she was killed. Now the other demonstrator who died inside the building, I believe, she was at one of the doors, was a woman from Maryland. And she, according to her friends, she fell down and had a classic door jam situation. She was, I guess, smothered, asphyxiated, whatever. I haven't seen any accounting. They just say that she was crushed. And anybody who has ever looked at scenes of where there were crowds and there were fires or emergencies and people died in great numbers, it's because they're all jammed in the door. If you all try to go through one door, somebody's going to die. She fell down and her friends couldn't pick her up. So there, she wasn't, in that sense, you know, fighting anybody. She fell to the floor. So that's, I think I've accounted for three. Now, and remember, I'm doing this because people were reading these reports who say, killed in the melee. There are two more. A man from Pennsylvania, 50 years old, a computer programmer. Nobody's established he had anything that even was in the building. He died of a stroke. And the last time anybody saw him, and I haven't seen the police tell us where he was, the last time they saw him, he had driven a van from Pennsylvania full of Trump supporters to attend the Trump rally. And then he dropped them off, and he went to find a parking place. And when the friends at the end of the day phoned his mobile to see, can they go home? they couldn't reach him. And then they, police said he was dead. They found him dead from a stroke. So that's hardly, unless somebody's going to tell me they know where he was, he apparently is it just a guy who died of a stroke. So remember that his death is thrown into the story about the storming. And the next individual was a man from Arizona, I believe, but he died of a heart attack. And the witness to his death, which I think would stand up, is a New York Times reporter. He said he was talking on his mobile phone. He was not inside the building. He was standing somewhere on the Capitol grounds. And yes, if he was told to not be there, then he was in violation. But he was talking on a mobile phone to his wife, he dropped dead of a heart attack. And the witness is, as I say, a New York Times reporter. I say all these details because there's an inflation going on in language, which is disproportionate to reality. And that is not a road that people should go down when they talk about incidents of the type that happened at the Capitol. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the prosecutions in this case, because, and it's probably a blessing, they have identified one group for sure of being there, and they're going to be in deep trouble. And this group is called the Oath Keepers, and it's made up of former policemen. And yes, I think that's the backbone of the group, the Oath Keepers. And Phil, you're probably aware, over the years, anybody paying attention to American political life and worrying about people carrying guns and rifles would know that the Oath Keepers have been around too many events and not been apprehended or blocked or even publicly called to account. They say we have a free press and all that, but why has the media been afraid to do something about this group of police, mainly retired, but probably many serving police officers who associate with a group that the New York Times calls a militia? And anybody who listens to the Taylor Report knows that we know all about militias here. And we are part of the group that wants to try to educate the American public about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Because they're not militias, unless, as a Georgetown law professor has written, and I'll provide her name in the second half of the show. If you're going to use the word New York Times, if you're going to use the word militia, you have to put the word unlawful in front of it, which is the same as saying one group is members of the United States Navy, and the other group is pirates. The difference between a pirate and a Navy is pretty significant. We thought it was important that we move. We all used to be pirates, and in the time of the American War of Independence, probably one third of the people at sea fighting other people in the name of a country were pirates. So there is a tradition there, but we tried to overcome it and move towards civilization and international law. And in the case of the United States, they need to return to the law. But the law professor says these are unlawful groups. You can't call them militias. They are, another word for them would be armed gang. So I think, well, this is a matter that we should go into a bit more. I think we'll take a break and we'll come back on the other side with a discussion of the right to keep and bear arms, and also where the Biden administration is likely to take us. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM, and we'll be back.